Rick, I can't thank you enough for joining our podcast on Talent Acquired. For those who don't know who you are, I'll let you quickly introduce yourself and then I'll run through your background.
Thanks, Chris. Absolute pleasure to be here. I've been in technology sales my entire career, which unfortunately is now getting to span a little over two decades, which gives you an idea of how old I am. I spent about a decade and a half with Cisco in a variety of roles and then jumped into the startup space. I'm now on my third startup company, and it's just been an absolute pleasure to be a part of each and every one of those organizations and to share some of those lessons learned here with you.
Yeah, can't thank you enough. And so, you know, for those who don't know, and as you mentioned, you touched on your history in technology, you were at Cisco for, you know, a little over 16 years or right at 16 years. And everybody knows them in terms of what they do and held a variety of different roles. And then from Cisco, go to a startup, which I believe was your first startup, Ava Security, correct?
That's right. Yep. Very good.
And yeah, ran sales there. And then from there, had a successful acquisition and Motorola had come in and bought you guys out, which was fantastic. And then on to the next startup, which is Neat, which I'll let you briefly talk about Neat because we do work together. And I think what you guys do is fantastic.
Yeah, we sure do. Neat's been an awesome story and at the market at the right time. Started out when COVID was changing the way we live, work, learn, and play. So Neat was on a rocket ship of growth, working through a new way of working, new way of learning. And we've been able to continue to drive this company forward, and we've changed who we are and how we go to market. But at its core, it's really about delivering beautifully simplistic devices that change the experience and how we collaborate.
You know, as we touch into this, you know, I'm very curious because the biggest thing that we're seeing today, and I really do appreciate you taking time to speak on this, is a lot of individual contributors, when they think about that next opportunity of growth, it naturally progresses to leadership. And being that you and I are both in sales, you know, one of the things that I consistently hear is how unprepared people are making that transition from individual contributor to leadership, and even from frontline leadership to mid-level management and even to executive. And so I find your experience so interesting because you've been a part of really some of the biggest companies and some of the most successful startups. So what I'm curious is when did you first get into sales leadership? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're spot on, by the way. I happen to think first line leadership is the hardest and most important job in any company. So an unbelievable amount of respect for anybody considering going down this path. It's immensely important to the success of the organization. It's also a really hard way to earn a paycheck. So we'll talk more about
that. We're going to talk more about that in this episode for sure.
For sure. I did not raise my hand. I did not volunteer. I was 29. I was a good account manager. I've been in the role 5 or 6 years. And I had a mentor, at that point, somebody who was two levels above me. So my boss's boss, come to me and say, hey, I think you would be good in a role like this. You should interview for this open opportunity. There was a transition taking place on my team. He suggested I interviewed. I said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. No offense. I don't want to be you when I grow up. That doesn't look like a lot of fun. And he said, seriously, Rick, you should give this a try. And Chris, I was very, very lucky that I went through the interview process and won the job. And that single-handedly changed the trajectory of my professional career going forward.
So just so I'm hearing this correctly, you were not super stoked about going that direction. Why?
No, it was almost like an, oh shit, what did I just get myself into moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
What was giving you that feeling though? What were you seeing that had you kind of maybe apprehensive?
You know, it coincided with the birth of my first child, which was also a little unplanned. That wasn't exactly part of our of the timeline that we had thought things through, and we wouldn't change it. Looking back, it's funny how things work, but we had just had Braxton and I was dealing with a lot of internal feelings. I mean, you're with your first child right now, right? And all of a sudden you're starting to think
almost
about,
5 months. Yep.
Right? All of a sudden you're like, wow, there's more to this world than just me. I have to be looking at things differently and thinking about things differently and thinking about the environment that I want to create for somebody that I care a lot about. And I probably have to mature and grow up in a few ways, and I have to provide in different ways than I ever have before, and my priorities are changing. And I was going through all of that on the personal side, like right as my mentor came and asked me to apply for this job. And so I saw some parallels there, and that's the only reason that I entertained the request.
I want to talk about what most people think of how you get into leadership, and then what you just talked. You were selected. So how does that work for those who are trying to go in? Or do you have to be crushing your number? Do you always have to be above your number, just below your number? I want to know the performance side of it. And then, you know, from what you understand now, how are they making those selections in leadership? Are people volunteering, or are you, all those things?
Yeah, no, great thought. Just because you're a great athlete doesn't mean you'll be a great coach. So in many cases, your best high performers are not necessarily your best leaders, right? I mean, I think in order to lead, there's a different skill set than what it takes to be a successful individual contributor. And that's not bad. Like, it's just different. And recognizing that just because you're overachieving in your function today does not prepare you for the next step. That was a big lesson that I had to learn and that I continue to see today with a lot of folks making those transitions themselves, right? At the same time, I'll talk out of both sides of my mouth, there is no way you're going to get promoted if you're not succeeding in your current job. Like, if you can't bloom where you're planted and do what you're doing well, why would anybody entrust you with more responsibility and a larger scope of role? So there has to be a consistently track record of experience and success in whatever it is that you're doing to consider being, you know, leading a function.
Now, as far as you mentioned a mentor, two levels above that, how much does that contribute to the ability to get into leadership? Not that you were planning that, but I do find that interesting because I've heard that from multiple people.
Having a mentor personally and professionally, and again, having multiple mentors is an absolute key element of long-term success in this game, no matter who you are. I would say not just critical, but almost a prerequisite to getting that role and then being successful. So while I've had different mentors all the way throughout and they continue to evolve, there have been some that have been the same, been a part of that journey with me, Chris. And we still have discussions on growth areas where I need to do a better job or things that we know I'm working on personally and professionally. And it's really interesting to be able to have a discussion with someone who's known you for 10 or 15 years and can immediately pick up on, like, hey, Rick, remember what we talked? You know, we're kind of slipping back here, right? Like, this is an area where we're working on it. You need to continue to grow, right? And you can have that really candid discussion, because that is one of the things about leadership, Chris. And you know this, like, it's lonely, man. Like, who do you talk to? You can't bitch down, right? And you can't necessarily talk up to your boss. They got a lot going on in their world. You may or may not have a large peer group. It can get a little lonely in those roles.
So you get into your first leadership role. Did you have any idea of what it would be like versus reality? So let's start with what you thought it was going to be like.
Well, sure. Leadership is easy, right? You get a nicer company car. You go get a bunch of steak dinners and everybody else does the work for you and you take all the credit, right? Isn't that why everyone gets into leadership? I had an idea what it was going to be, and that idea was making everybody do things the way I did them, because I was successful in my previous role. And so if you just did it my way, you just did it this way, you know, you'd be successful too, Chris, right? What could be so wrong with that? I had a very narrow view of what good looked like and of the different ways to accomplish the goal. And I was very quickly, the blinders came off, and I recognized really quickly, wow, there's a lot of amazingly talented people out here, and they all do things differently than I do. And I'm learning more from them than they are from me. Oh my God, now I have imposter syndrome. Like, am I qualified to do this job? Am I good enough to do this job? Am I gonna be able to give them what they need from me, you know, in this role to help them be the best they can be? That was a very difficult transition for me when I very quickly realized it wasn't just being a super account manager. It was truly being a sales director, a sales leader, a coach, a confidant, and supporting them in a totally different way.
How do you as a first-time leader, when you don't have the experience, right, of managing people through situations, how do you build that trust? Because I feel like a lot of leaders go in and they want to be the hero and save the day. It's just like rookie athletes. They expend too much energy instead of letting the game come to them. What advisement or what could you share that could help somebody navigate that?
That's a great question. The first piece about it is you have to be prepared to make the transition from me to we. And if you don't, it's really hard to build trust if your primary goal is serving me, right? It has to be about we. And that's a total mindset shift, especially for most high-performing individual contributors who have been compensated, praised, and rewarded for caring about me, right? Like, that's how our systems work in sales. So making sure that we clearly demonstrate that it's about we, that it's about us, that it's about the team, and being able to deliver on that and demonstrate that you truly walk that walk and talk that talk is a starting point to earning the trust you need from your team. That just gets you in the door. Over-communication is critical. So I remember sitting down and just thinking through, like, here's what I hire for, here's what I fire for, and putting that on paper and sharing that with the team. Talking about how do you communicate. Chris, are you a text guy? Would you rather text at all hours of the night? Do you want to pick up the phone and call me and talk for 5 minutes? Do you want to talk every day? Do you want to talk every other day? Do you hate email? Do you love email? Do you want to follow on social media? Do you want to be friends? Like, do you hate social media? Like, what are the things that get you going? How do you want to communicate with me in this role? And if I don't understand or ask those questions, then again, huge miss and huge missed opportunity for me to build trust and connect with you where you are. And that's all really basic stuff, right? Let's talk about expectations. How do I help you? What is it that you're looking for? What level of involvement and engagement do you want from me? What's working about this team? What's not working about this team? What would you change if you were in this role for a day? What would you do differently? You know, coming at it with a little bit more of a humble, vulnerable, question-based approach, specifically early on.
Not everybody's going to perform on the sales team. And I think this is unique timing on this podcast because I would say it's a much tougher sales environment. These are the conversations we've had a lot of sellers. It's not easy. Sales cycles are longer. How do you handle the underperformers?
It sucks, Chris. That never gets better. Never gets better, right? And I don't mean the act of like coaching and hard feedback and transparent feedback and development and performance improvement plans and like all those things are a part of the job. And those all go into the whole what they don't tell you about when you're getting ready to become a leader. Like, no one tells you how to fire somebody, right? Like, that's just left out of the manual. Those are some things you have to learn. But having to let somebody go for whatever the reason is still the single most uncomfortable, difficult part of my job. I absolutely hate it. I have become much more proficient in it and better at it. And I have a playbook and a process that I follow because that's what the job requires. And that is the responsibility that you owe to the company based on your role. And let's talk a little bit about role and how I see that impacting leadership in general. But it's absolutely a huge part of what you have to do. And we talked earlier about what do you hire for and what do you fire for. You better know what those things are and be able to draw a hard line, especially when it's not performance related, when it's behavioral related.
What would you say? Here's what I would recommend when you have to do that. And here's how to approach it. What would you say to somebody?
Yeah. I would say never forget that you're a human and they're a human. And empathy goes a really long way. And people can tell when you're being empathetic and genuine. Even if you're reading the script that you have to read from HR, and let's call that what it is, right? Like, how I let somebody go at a small private Norwegian company is very different from how I let somebody go when I worked for a large publicly traded American company.
And that comes into the next thing, which is when leaders take over an environment that's toxic. And I would say today, from my lens, I see a lot of that going on. I do. I see a lot of leaders that aren't qualified to be in these roles because they thought what you thought it was, you know, just this come in and this is how it's going to work. But now they have to make tough decisions, decisions they've never had to make. And so how do you, I don't know if you've ever had that happen in your career, but Yeah. How do you handle that when you come in and the teams, they're broken?
Take a step back on that one, Chris, because I think it is important for the non-leaders listening to recognize that the difference in leadership from a decision-making process is both the volume and the intensity of decisions that you have to make as an individual contributor, right? So I think there's more decisions, there's more coming at you, there's more that you have to process. The intensity and the significance of those decisions crank up, right? They increase because they affect a larger number of people. And the problems that you're being asked to solve are by nature a little more complex because things only get to you when they aren't being solved at a level below, right? So the problems that go up to my boss, the CRO, are really difficult problems that I can't solve. And the ones that are coming to me are the ones that my directors, senior directors can't solve. And it kind of waterfalls down. So that's the only thing I would say around when sometimes it seems like, you know, you have a distracted or a detached leader, and it's like they're probably dealing, they're dealing with 10, you know, if each member of your team has one crisis a week, then you've got 10 crises a week, every week that you're dealing with. It's really hard to turn that around with the same people in it that made it toxic in the first place, right? That's kind of like, you can't use the same logic of thinking that got you into this problem to get you out of this problem. So some things have to change. So you have to become a change agent, like a beacon of light standing on the hill for what change looks like. And everything has to be in alignment with that. How you compensate, how you reward, how you recognize, you know, who you surround yourself with, what you do, how you do it, what you ask of the team. There has to be like really, really clear alignment on what good looks like. And that comes back to the why. So it's back to goal setting, back to clarity of communication, back to how this impacts your people in the short and long term, and then putting those programs and systems around reinforcing that at every step along the way. And Chris, the people that don't want to buy in or can't buy in, can't be a part of that team anymore. You always know that I probably should have made that change sooner. And I hung in there and I gave it the bet. I kept hoping it would change and I kept hoping we'd find a different resolution. And inevitably, here we are 6 months later at the same conclusion. And that's an important one. But anytime you're going into a true turnaround, you've got to be prepared to make those really hard decisions, and you make them fast, and you do them with empathy, and you do them with clarity. But you make hard calls, you do it fast, you move forward, and you surround yourself with people who want to buy in and want to be a part of what you're building.
When it comes to getting rid of those people that aren't a part of it, one thing I've seen is indecision. Mm-hmm. You know you need to get rid of that person, but you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I see that a lot right now.
Guilty. Guilty as charged.
Yeah.
Been there. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been guilty too, and I think that's a very tough one. It's sometimes it's not always clear because sometimes they are performers,
yes.
But they're not a fit for the new direction.
Actually,
yes,
that's right.
Yes. So, mm-hmm. What is your advisement on that?
It's actually easier when you have a behavioral issue, right? If you think about like their skill issues and will issues, right? But if somebody ethically crosses the line or behaves in a way that's disrespectful to their peers or to a customer, like those at the end of the day are easy to understand and easier to action. The hard ones are where you have great people that struggle to perform, right? You've got that group that's hard, and then you've got the amazing performers that don't buy in culturally to who you are and where you're going. That group is also hard. The group that either doesn't have the right skill or doesn't have the right will or just is kind of in the middle of that quadrant, like I think they're all hard, but those are doable, right? It's the two on the other
feel
side
like
of
you,
the quadrant.
The process, like you just look at the formula of success. Are you got your activities, your KPIs? The performance is where I see the biggest challenge is because if you're in tough times and you've got kind of the village asshole who's killing it.
That's right.
And they're making your number. That is the biggest thing is the timing on that because you know they're going to help you get your number, but it's...
Bingo.
Yeah.
And I'm a player's coach. I have always defaulted to, you know, the man in the arena and the guys on the field and the ones who are out there making it happen. And I give as much latitude as possible. But the longer I've been in these roles, it's at some point, you're either going to be a part of what we're building and you want to be here and you want to operate in the way that culturally we hold ourselves accountable to, or you don't. And there's a lot of talented people out there, Chris. And we can't believe there's a scarcity mindset that Chris is the only really good salesperson at Neat. And he happens to be an asshole, but that's okay because he's a really good salesperson. Like, there's a lot of great salespeople out there. And if you're going to be an asshole, don't be one here at Neat, right? And we'll find another really great salesperson, right? And that's hard. It's hard to do in the moment, especially it's hard to do when you're in a turnaround. It's hard to do when you're under the gun. And I mean, but it's just such a much more enjoyable environment for everybody to work in. And it lifts everybody else up around them. And you see the rising tide of the rest
for sure.
of your organization. And it goes back to you making a stand and for what you believe in and for what good looks like and for doing the right things. And I think as a leader, you have to do that in order to win the rest, tying some things here together to win that respect and credibility of your team, for them to engage in followership, right? Everyone talks about leadership. What are you doing to inspire followership, right? That's your force multiplier. It's not you standing on your soapbox telling the team, thou shalt, that's not, it might be leadership, but that doesn't inspire followership.
To kind of get to the end of all this, my question to you, there's a couple questions I have left. There's a lot of stress, there's a lot of decision-making. What would you say, because we've been talking about almost, we haven't said it, we've almost been kind of talking people maybe out of leadership. What would you say makes it worth it?
Yeah, well, if we haven't scared everybody away yet, so if anybody
and there's still anybody listening,
That's right.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's let's go back to the sign behind you. Remember your why. It's the people that you're working with that are in your care. It's seeing your reps be successful, go through life events, achieve things they didn't think they could achieve, cash that, you know, that $1 million commission check, right? Win that deal, get that promotion, take that life event. Like, it's seeing the team that you're building succeed against all the other headwinds and reasons why they shouldn't. It's the aggregate good of what you're investing all this time and effort into. Like, that's the drug for me. That's the exciting part. You know, what we sell, how we sell, like all of that comes and goes and changes, but the people are the constant, you know, and those are the people that you choose to do this again with on the next one. And then you're exposed to new people. Like, it's just, it's the continuous cycle about people and achievement and success and growing together. Like, that's the best part of the whole thing.
It's obviously, I'm assuming, changed you, not just professionally, but personally. But how has your journey in like leadership from the time you started in leadership to where you're at now, how has it personally and professionally changed you in ways you didn't really expect when you look back?
Well, I'd like to think I'm more open to differing opinions and I'm willing to see the other side of it. I'd like to think I have a little more respect and grace for like everybody and everything and just coming at it from a different perspective and a different view than I ever have before. I also know that there's a innate confidence and a belief that we're going to get through this and we're going to figure it out and this too shall pass. And, you know, I'm very confident in what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So that all makes me a better person, a better husband, better parent. My kids might argue that last point with you a little bit right now. Having a 16 and a 13-year-old at home, we don't
see
eye to eye on everything. It's the continuous growth, brother. Like, why? At some point, when you're not growing, when you're not getting better, when you're not growing, when you're not being challenged, like, what's the point? What's the point?
Do you now feel like going back to like, I'm not sure leadership's for me from when you first took to now, do you feel like I feel I'm built for this, for the recruiting? Like, you couldn't pitch me anything. I love
right.
it.
Right.
Do you feel now like I was built for this?
Yeah. Unless I all of a sudden learn how to hit my driver 100 yards longer and a lot straighter, there's probably nothing else that I would rather do. Than this. This is who I want to be. This is what I want to do. You know, this is where I want to do it. And I'm really, really pleased that I'm on this journey and that I get to help influence the next generation of leaders who are trying to figure this all out right now, right? And those are the discussions I like having the most on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I can't thank you enough for this. Has been great. Very, very insightful. Thank you for taking the time to explain.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Awesome. Really enjoyed the time.